think in 3 years we're going to have like 500,000 more trans men because of the show, and I really specifically meant because of Izzy. And yeah, I have had so many folks I know who I connected with through fandom who did transition post this show. And so as a figure, like, this fandom lore and this figure of Izzy has been a powerful, like, touchstone for a lot of people, actually.
Seattle, Washington is now officially the coolest city in the U.S. because they have the most listeners of this podcast. But sure, very, very close second place is Pittsburgh, and New York City are tied. Yeah. So if Pittsburgh, if you want to maintain your number one position,
I will allow Seattle to have this one just because they're so much bigger than us. And because, you know, this week we've had the amount of rain that Seattle normally has, and we're underwater. So they can have it back. They can have the title.
And between me and Ringa, this current podcast episode right now is one third Pittsburgh. So one-third I think Pittsburgh. We're still representing.
Yeah, that's true. We're going to do a new little segment on here, which is, what is the most gay pirate thing that has happened to you this week? Who wants to go first?
So I was at WonderCon this weekend, and a cosplay acquaintance I've known for some time, we run into each other and we say hi. She's like, listen, I know that you have a partner and that he's a guy, but in my brain, you are a lesbian. You are in the lesbian category. And it's like, that's very sweet. Thank you. Honorary lesbian.
I feel like Rhys Darby is also an honorary lesbian.
Yeah, he definitely is.
And maybe even Taika, too.
I mean,
Taika's bi. I claim him as mine.
The way I see it is that straight people can still be queer.
Oh, of course. But there's a special energy to being a lesbian, and I feel like Rhys Darby has that lesbian energy.
Yeah, I think Rhys is the lesbian, and Taika is the self-proclaimed gay icon.
There are a lot of lesbians on Twitter who are like, why am I so into Rhys Darby? So, yeah.
One of us.
Chloe, what's been the most gay pirate thing to happen to you this week?
Last week, I went gay dancing.
Yay!
For the first time in a while. That was a lot of fun. I guess it wasn't gay pirate dancing specifically.
Was it at a club?
Oh. It was at a club. There's a DJ in Pittsburgh called Jellyfish who performs around the city. And whenever they perform, it's kind of like a queer club night. So just really good queer vibes. Jellyfish hanging from the ceiling. It was a lot of fun.
I love the jellyfish.
Sounds amazing.
And Carly, what's been the most gay pirate thing to happen to you this week?
So this past weekend, two gay pirate friends up in LA, and I went to a party hosted by Yes Ma'am or Yes Ma'am Club. And I was just reading up what they introduced themselves at. It's a queer kink adjacent events in LA and New York. And we specifically decided to go to that one because the special host was going to be Vico Ortiz. So the three of us are there. My friend and I roll in kind of dressed up for the night, but he went all in on his outfit and Vico was the judge. And we didn't know that there was a contest for costumes. And like, he ended up winning second place. Vico Ortiz chose like one of our gay pirate fandom friends to like be second place in like a queer vampire themed kink party this past weekend. Oh. So
I love how that went. I'm so jealous. So I could not make it.
I wish you would have been there. It would have been great and green.
I know.
And Vico was dressed as Izzy, basically. Yeah. Like the leather gloves and all the leather stuff and the leather harness. Like, it just how much the people like who make up the show love their own show. And I see it every time when I see Vico at different events. Just always representing. I love it.
I love it. And you've got to like go to a number of events that Vico has done or been a part of. And how is it? How does Vico interact with the people who go?
Vico is so warm and so friendly, and just like Samba, I've been able to kind of interact with, because I live in San Diego, so I'm able to get up to the LA area whenever there's like the strike stuff that were happening all summer into fall, and just different events like the stand-up comedy routines and all that. warm, friendly, approachable, love the fans, will stick around and hang out and talk to folks, and just are, yeah, they're one of us. They're fun. And I can't not be weird and awkward around them. So I'm like with my camera, like, please don't perceive me because I'm so weird and awkward around you, but I love you.
And Ringa, speaking of someone who is not awkward around our idols, I identify with being extremely awkward around our idols and not wanting to, wanting to engage with them, but also not wanting to. So Ringa is really good at being cool.
I'm just awkward in my own way, and that's around everybody.
So Ringo, what's been the most gay pirate thing that's happened to you this week?
Probably just that I'm still doing a lot more to do the planning of my second Calypso's birthday party, which is happening at the end of May here in Pittsburgh. So everyone who's listening from Pittsburgh, save May 25th on your calendar. And yeah, I've just been doing a lot of discussing some logistics of that and some props and some photo backdrops we're going to make and, you know, good stuff like that.
Very fun. Is there going to be a goat this time?
Maybe. Woo! Maybe there'll be something even more exciting than a goat.
What could be? A mermaid?
Maybe, and a unicorn.
Maybe there will be a mermaid. Maybe there will be a unicorn. I don't know. I have to figure out how to outdo myself.
And new on the... Well, actually, we have two new people. I feel like Chloe has been part of the podcast for a long time because you've been mentioned on the podcast. And you've
been lurking in your chat for a while.
Lurking in our group chat. So I'm like, oh, wait a minute. This is Chloe's first time too. So Chloe and Neil are both new to the podcast. Neil, what's been the most gay pirate thing that's happened to you this week?
I feel like I didn't have a very gay pirate thing happen, but I had a very like Steve Bonnet thing happen, yes. Which is
he's a gay pirate.
I'm a very Steve coded person. So I started my class just started up that I teach, and I have my students fill out or complete like a portfolio reflection each week. So they're supposed to kind of go to class and then at the end of the week, like write this reflective piece. And a bunch of my students turned in the second week's portfolio before we had our class session. So I sent them an email that was like, you know, this is how I expect you all to do, you know, this portfolio assignment. And then when we had class on Tuesday, a bunch of my students came up to me and they're like, just so you know, like all of the due dates are off for all of those assignments on Canvas. So we just didn't know what we were supposed to do.
And Mercury retrograde.
We just did that anyway. And I was like, okay, yeah, that makes total sense. I'm sorry.
Or was it leap year?
Yeah, it was like, I had tried for a fuckery, but it ended up being the wrong day. So I was a little embarrassed, but I felt very much like this is kind of something Steve Bonnet would experience probably.
But my thing is I've been back on writing fanfic again. Maybe the eclipse activated me. Maybe I had a vacation, so that helped. But I added the Ricky chapter to my season 3 fic, which is my version of season 3. And it goes into some of the things I talked about in my ideas in the Ricky episode, where Ricky is like Phantom of the Opera and in his goth phase, and a bunch of 12-year-old girls idolize him. And it was so fun to write, and I think it's hilarious. So I'm glad that fic is now moving forward and has momentum again.
Nice. Congratulations.
Thank you. I'm excited about it. Let's introduce you all. So we have Carly Delso Saavedra, who is here. Say hi, Carly.
Hola.
We have Lacey Bond, the host of the Temple of Geek podcast. And Lacey, you were just at WonderCon. How was WonderCon?
WonderCon was good. I recorded an episode of the podcast there and I got to cosplay Elphaba, which was a dream cosplay of mine.
Beautiful. And you were all green. It was lovely. And Ringa Sun is here as well. Say hi, Ringa.
What's up?
Also, new on the pod is Chloe, who makes a number of very funny memes. My favorite meme that you've made is the Ant-Man meme where he's recapping the post-cancellation drama in the fandom. And that is like one of my all-time favorite R-Flag memes.
Mm-hmm. I'm very flattered because I think it's overly generous to say I create a lot of funny memes because I've never been that person. I lurk on other people's memes and occasionally have something that I think about and then need to do, like the Ant-Man one. When it got in my head, I was like, I literally can't do any work until I actually make this. And so that's what happened.
It was great. And you also, we talked about you in episode 5 because you got David Jenkins out of his hibernation, that you hosted this long analysis of what Our Flag Means Death means. And David retweeted it and said that he liked the analysis.
Yes, but also that I was wrong. But I lost it. I had posted thoughts. Again, it was just something I got in my head. And I was like, I just need to post this or else I won't be able to do anything else. And it was about an interpretation of the title, Our Flag Means Death, considering the symbolism of the death card in tarot, which really represents change. And so I posted about that and wasn't even expecting a response, but I did ask David if I was like, I'd love to know if, you know, you were actually thinking about any of this or if it just worked out beautifully with that symbolism. And he responded, nope, just thought it was cool. Love this analysis though.
Yeah. And that was so nice that he not just replied, but like retweeted it to kind of,
it was really sweet.
Yeah. To share it. It was really nice. So as I'm editing this podcast, I realize that I didn't properly introduce Neil in this like section where I'm introducing people. And Neil is amazing. Neil is new to the pod. Neil has done all of this like incredibly interesting research on Izzy and transness and why people connect Izzy with transness. And it's so fascinating. A lot of the pod is dedicated to this research that Neil did. So you're going to hear Neil talk a lot. It's brilliant. And I'm so sorry I didn't give Neil a proper introduction here. I'm going to blame Mercury retrograde, but also I'm a dick. So Eddie Peaches posted on Tumblr about going to the Writers Guild Foundation Library and read through all the scripts for Our Flag Means Death Season 1. You're not allowed to photograph or photocopy any of the scripts. So they took notes and they made a list of some things they read in the Season 1 scripts that they thought were interesting. And so I thought we could talk about them a little bit. And if you guys haven't heard about this, then this is breaking news. I'll leave like a link to the post in the show notes. But one is that Izzy, Fang, Ivan helped get Steed's ship unstuck in episode 2, and their dynamic was less antagonistic and more kind of silly.
And yeah, we've seen that behind the scenes that Samba posted way back when at some point. He posted like way back during the first season, he posted a tiny little clip of it. And then recently, when I say recently, like, you know, probably 6 months ago now, posted a longer clip of it where we can see Izzy yelling at them, you know, like directing when they're gonna push the ship back into the ocean.
Yeah, and it's interesting. So they shot that version, but then they also shot another version where it's just, you know, Steed's crew and I believe it was like the indigenous people on the island, like helping, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I like that version, the version we got to see. And I like it. One of the reasons is because I think it's funny that Izzy, Ivan, Fang just sort of end up as crew members on the Revenge because Ed is really into Steed, but they weren't part of that group until Ed was just like, no, we're just going to stay here. We're not going back to the Queen Anne's Revenge. And I just think that's funny. But that wouldn't have been there had they kind of already established this like rapport. But
yeah.
I think I like what we got in that case.
Yeah.
Also, we have Izzy saying, you know, this isn't over. And Steed saying, good, because I kind of enjoyed it, you know, and that wouldn't have been there either.
Yeah, that's true. I do love that moment.
Yeah, that's right. Before they, you know, fall in love with each other, but they don't know it.
Yeah. And it's also a very good display of like how insane Steed actually is.
Yeah.
Well, it's just interesting that they shot from a production creative standpoint, that they shot both versions. The thinking involved in, like, are we going to kind of go this direction with the story or this direction with the story? And they left both open by shooting both. I think that's really interesting. It makes me wonder what other things were shot as potential directions to go in.
It's possible that they shot maybe that part with the, you know, them helping the ship to go back in and decided they didn't like it or something. And so changed it up a little bit.
Yeah. Fascinating. But Blackbeard is described as having David Lee Roth vibes.
I mean, he doesn't not. Yeah.
Lots of Pete's Blackbeard stories. I would love to hear more of Pete's Blackbeard stories.
Yeah, that's very good.
That would be a great YouTube video or a behind the scenes something. Just a long reel of Pete's stories.
Yes. Pete's Blackbeard story when they're raiding the French ship after they like toast the baguettes and Blackbeard has the flaming head. That Pete Blackbeard story now has added meaning for me, in addition to being like one of the most ridiculous scenes in a ridiculous show. But on the auction, I got the two black fleur-de-lis flags that were in that scene.
Oh, how cool.
Wow, congratulations. That's so awesome.
I don't have them yet, but I'm really excited to put them up.
I hope that fanfic writers are maybe thinking about, wouldn't it be a fun fic to just write out all of Black Pete's Blackbeard stories? And
yes,
I would love to hear them.
And see how ridiculous they can be.
He had me until the flip and then rolled from there. I was with them till the flip.
Buttons started the trend of pirates having birds on their shoulders by bringing Carl to the Republic of Pirates.
I love that. I think that is probably just what happened, actually, right. Even if we didn't see it.
Because there's so many other things in the show where it's like, oh, this was the first time they did whatever thing. You know, like we invented pyramid schemes and we invented walking the plank and all that stuff.
So good.
And fan fiction.
Right. And fan fiction.
Yeah, this is true. But I would love to see fanfic writers have fun with that idea of like other pirates being extremely impressed with Buttons having the seagull and trying it out with a variety of other birds, which leads to really bad results. For instance, I'll try it with an owl and the talons like rip their hull open.
Yes.
Here's this hawk. And it like tears off their shoulder and blood splurts everywhere until someone's like, how about just this friendly parrot? This is good. We'll do this, you know. And I feel like this is something that was actually in Fix, is the crew had ye old chore wheel for the ship. And I feel like I've read multiple Fix where like Olawande has like a chore wheel when he takes over briefly as captain. And it's all very, I feel like maybe even I wrote that.
I love that one too, because I could totally see that on the Revenge. Like some people are really not pulling their weight with chores. So Steed's got to like intervene in like the dad of the group and make a chore wheel.
Right. There's a lot of fanfic about post season one when Steed comes back and everybody comes back. One of the things that Izzy, you know, that ends up where they can like make some kind of a piece is that Izzy has made up a chore wheel type of thing for this useless crew, you know, and that's one of the only things that they can, you know, work peacefully with.
I love that. Jim inspired Ivan to explore his gender identity.
We were robbed.
Fic writers, this is where you come in.
Yep.
I would have loved to have seen that too, because it would have been like an in-character on-screen version of what it sounds like Biko actually did for a lot of people in the cast and crew.
Yeah.
I heard that there was sort of like a bench that if you sat on and talked to Biko, it's kind of like you wanted to talk about your gender identity. If you like sat on this bench and Biko would come talk to you.
Wow, like a gender bending bench.
Gender benching.
That's great.
I can't remember where I heard that. I'll have to confirm that, so I'm not spreading misinformation, but I'm pretty sure that I'd heard that.
Roach was part of Lucius's little polycule.
I mean, who isn't?
I would love to see some affection between Lucius and Roach. And yes. I feel like the Lucius ship is not one that is explored in fanfic enough.
Could we get somebody with the hard C in there? We could do Ludacris, maybe? I think we can mash up a couple enough to get that going.
God, I need that. That's great.
Okay, there was a cute line where Steed was talking to his daughter and said, "Your Uncle Edward would love you."
Oh my God.
I would have died. If that had happened in the TV show, I would have been like, he's already thinking so far ahead that he's introducing kids to his future Steed. Husband.
Well, Uncle is a weird choice. Poor Alma is going to see Steed and Ed making out and be like, "What, Dad? What are you doing to your brother?"
Yeah, I was thinking like Dunkle, like I don't know.
Alma had slightly more screen time in general. They were playing her up being a tomboy, wearing pants, and working in a stable.
Yes, love Alma.
So that's some good fic bunnies. And Steed was even more incredibly chill about Doug replacing him. He referred to Doug as your father when talking to Lewis, which I think people have noticed the resemblance between Lewis and Doug in that they have the same hairstyle.
Interesting.
And the Ed Steed kiss was not in the draft. It was still romantic, but they just bumped shoulders or something. Thank God that was changed.
Laika and Reese were like, "Look at this amazing wall. We can't not kiss in front of it."
Get romantical feelings.
Okay,
about this
that's
wall.
A good segue into like one of our first our flag lore topics, which is what the fuck is up with the wall? Because I know the aftermath of the law of the wall thing, where people will just like randomly say like, not to alarm anyone, but there's a wall there. So, what was the origin story of the wall?
I don't know that there was an origin, just that nobody really noticed that it existed because everyone was busy watching these gay pirates kiss. And then somebody was like, "Hey, look at that wall back there."
So sorry, this is going to betray my lack of fandom lore knowledge. Is there a wall?
Yes,
there is a wall.
Yes, right, there's a wall behind them. Okay.
I know. I had to look too, because then after all this discussion, I was like, but wait, is it really there? Or is this like Photoshop? But
they're
outside.
I mean,
it's not important that it's there. It's just, I don't know, for all of everybody staring at this scene constantly, I guess somebody thought they would have noticed it before, but they didn't. So what it really was, for me, it was a great reason to make a ton of memes. I didn't make any myself, but I watched, you know, that one from The Office where Rainn Wilson's like standing there and then what's her name appears behind him and he's like, "Oh, you guys know which meme I mean."
Yeah.
It's also basically the meme. Yeah. And it's like the same as when Buttons comes up behind and is like, "Yes. The sea is my love." It's basically the same.
Yeah.
And I mean, a similar kind of thing happened with the cow. Because people suddenly noticed, oh, there's a cow in this scene. We've never noticed the cow before when Steed is looking at the wanted poster of Blackbeard. But so that's really all it is just that people didn't notice there was a wall there before. Then when people noticed, they freaked out about it.
Yeah.
I think there was just one person saying, "Hey, like, did you guys notice the wall? Because I think I just noticed the wall." And then,
yeah. It was like a Mandela effect kind of thing, but it was just a wall.
Yeah. So Ringo,
and it was
your
meme shot differently, right? Like there are points where it's shot with like just the bushes behind them, and there's like this retaining wall off to the side. So yeah. It's not like they're up against a wall, and we just
right
notice because we're to distract you with a kiss.
Okay, a few final details about this. Okay, so Steed picks up a waterlogged Lucius before he made it to the desert island to save the rest of the crew. I'm as torturous as it was to not know if there was going to be a Lucius in season 2. I'm really glad that we had that experience of not knowing. And also that Lucius then got to go through all this trauma. And I love season two Lucius so much.
Yeah. In season one, Lucius is like 75% over everything. And then in season two, he gets to be 100% over everything.
And he goes into his dark, troubled trauma phase. I love it.
It also gave fandom like time to like spread its wings about all of the different conspiracy theories out there about whether or not Lucius survived and how they would write him back in. And that was a lot of fun.
Yeah. And I don't think anyone really kind of got that one right as far as what happened to him. I mean, could you? But yeah, I wish, you know, with many, many things that I wish had happened in season two, I wish he had had a little bit more time to process everything with Ed, the same way I wish Izzy had had more of a real apology from Ed. I just, you know, I know there wasn't time for it, but I wish we could have got more of Lucius processing everything, because we really got Pete being like, get over it. And he was like, okay. So
yeah, I do really love, though, how season one Lucius kind of has all the answers for things. And season two Lucius is really struggling. And, you know, there's been shows that have gone dark in their second season and had characters go dark. But I really enjoyed Lucius going dark a lot in this. And the last one is Izzy was revealed to be one of the Siete Gallos at the very end. And we're glad that didn't happen.
No, I'm glad that didn't happen. I don't like that.
Same.
I don't like it, but I feel like I have at least seen two or three fics where that's happened.
Yeah, I've seen it before. I don't know. That's like its own thing. And I don't feel like he needed to be a part of that to draw it all together. And I feel like that would have just made him seem extra evil in a way they didn't need to put on him, you know, but.
Yeah, I think the Siete Gallos represent like a whole another level. They represent like an evil or like really the worst of humanity in a way that Izzy wasn't. Like, there was conflicted.
And I think I get that part of it is like, it's about Jim growing because they get to forgive Izzy in that case, but also, is that a forgivable thing? Like, really? I don't know. Like, so I'm glad that didn't make the cut.
Yeah. We are talking fandom lore this week. Fandom lore. Carly asked me in the group chat, what do you mean by fandom lore? And it's any topic that makes the fandom just go off. Is that a good definition?
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's kind of like the fandom's own little urban dictionary.
Yeah, I would define it as like specific stories, themes, or tropes. Usually I feel like fandom lore is like tropes that show up often in a fandom's derivative works. Tropes and motifs.
It could also get like real culty. It could get, you know, in the fandom that we shall not name, there was like actual cult leaders happening in the fandom. Like it could go real, real dark, but we're going to keep it all positive. So we can clarify the context. Lacey is joining us from the car. It's feeling very cryptid factor right now.
Yeah. The only thing better would be like, if you didn't charge your phone and you're about to run out.
It's at 53%. I'm sorry
to disappoint. For a little while.
But since it is nighttime, like, just keep an eye out on the sky. I'm a nighttime person. I hang out at night outside a lot. And I always see shit in the sky. So maybe we might have a sighting. The possibility is there on this podcast. Mm-hmm. Okay, we are getting into... Carly was going to say something. Go.
Just a clarifying question about lore. Is it something that's built like from the show that kind of like inspired something to grow out of the show to the fandom, or is it also like stuff that was like from the fandom that kind of just
all of it
rolled back into how we love the show? Okay.
Yeah. And here's the thing too, with this podcast and everything, staying on topic is not part of my agenda. So the most important thing is to make each other laugh. And if you go off on some random thing, but it's funny, Fantastic. We're keeping it in. So, but really, when it comes to fandom lore, nothing is off the table. Nothing is off the table. Okay, so, but I wanted to start with, and then we'll kind of go around and share each of our chosen fandom lore to discuss. There's so much lore around Izzy. I want to talk about that. So a big first question is, what is the Izzy Canyon?
What is the canyon?
What a question.
Yeah. So, I mean, the most basic definition explanation is that it came from a lot of, you know, not to get negative, but a lot of Izzy fans being kind of bullied by some people in the fandom. And somebody came up with this kind of metaphor of, you know, the people up above on the cliff sides, like screaming down at us and yelling at each other and everything. And we're just like down below hanging out, wanting to, you know, make our baby girl fall in love and get fucked and all that good stuff. And, you know, we're just chilling down here. But as I say with everybody who inquires about the canyon, it is also a metaphor for Izzy's dry gaping pussy. And that brings us to Neil.
So
that's the most uncomfortable phrase I've ever heard.
Good. That's so, what we want.
I think a piece that I would add to that before moving into like why like transing Izzy is that for folks who are in the canyon, like Izzy's the reason we watch the show. Like we might be invested, and note that I'm using the we pronoun, like that's how strongly it can be kind of as an identity. Like while folks might be just as invested in Ed and Steed, like Izzy's development and kind of characterization and who he is to the show is crucial to everyone, like who kind of exists in that. And I think that is kind of a response to a lot of sort of like negative characterization of Izzy sidelining his role in the show, that it was like, if you were a fan of Izzy from the beginning, you're sort of like, I don't understand where this is coming from. Like, he's so important to me. So that's one of the things that I think, beyond just the sort of like fandom side of it, it's also about your sort of interpretation of the show and investment in Izzy as a character.
And what is it that draws so many people to Izzy as a character that they really cling to? Just to this podcast, I know that the Izzy episode has double the listeners, the downloads that the rest of the episodes have. Usually I notice kind of listeners like, well, listen to one episode and then like jump around and go to the different characters or whatever. And it's like everyone, after whatever episode they listen to, then they go down to the Izzy episode and listen to that one. So Izzy draws so many people. What is it about him that is such a draw?
Well, I think everybody loves an antagonist. You know, I'm not going to say bad guy because he's not a bad guy, but he is opposing for a little while, you know, the main guys. And that is definitely something that always interests people. But also people are interested in broken people and people with, you know, deep issues, and people see themselves in those kind of characters. And he's arguably the one with the most like crazy looking fucked up weird shit going on inside him. And, you know, that attracts people. And I feel like even if you don't love some of the things he does, he's interesting to you. And also Con. Just Con, like he, you know, is, you can't help but be fascinated with everything he does because he just is so magnetic.
Yeah, I think Con is a really, really big part of it. I think for a lot of the fans of the show, of the Izzy fans of the show, for whom post-season two like felt very much like they can't really engage with canon anymore, there's been a shift to being a big fan of Con, thinking about it. Con's relationship to Izzy, because at so many conventions he's shared like Izzy's meaning to him. I'll say, like, for me, like, one of the most powerful things about Izzy is, like, at its core, Our Flag Means Death is a show about people in later in life, like, you know, realizing they want to change something about themselves and then doing that. And Izzy is this person who's watching all these people change around him that he has built his identity around. And so the idea of him change, the other people changing in relationship to that is so, is such a loss for him that, I think for a lot of people, I mean, I'll go into this probably a little bit more, but like, that's such a experience for a lot of people who are trans, for people who have been part of a marginalized community. Like, it's just very much like, you're kind of watching all these people change and you don't know what that means for you. So I also think that's kind of why there's such a divide in the fandom. Like, people who have, who saw the show and like felt very strongly like this representation of like taking a leap of faith later on in life, really identified with Ed and Steed. And then the people who were their like friends and loved ones who watched them do that were the, you know, maybe have had to already have done that kind of work to change themselves, like saw themselves in Izzy. And so, yeah, that's one of the things I kind of chalk up to it.
Yeah,
That just reminds me of like, I used to do a lot of work with like at-risk youth, a lot of like queer youth centers and homeless youth centers, and the kiddos that always like gravitated toward me were the ones that were just like, at his core, like this hissing, fitting little like cat, feral cat energy, but like not because like he wanted to be alone and isolated, but that's all he knew as far as like just like you need to be combative, you need to be hard, you need to be like have all the armors and the spikes out because that's just how the world works, and like to learn how to take those layers down and learn how to be vulnerable and like figure out who you are in a softer space, like is what I love about Izzy as a character.
Right. He's coming from a place where like when you're not ready to fight or ready to protect yourself or when you're vulnerable, you die, you know, and that's what his side of piracy has always been like. So he resonates a lot with people who maybe wanted to change or embrace these different things in life but couldn't for whatever reason, for safety reasons or just because they didn't know how.
And Neil, you did a lot of research on the kind of collective fandom idea that Izzy is trans and the themes around trans Izzy. Can you speak to that?
Sure, yeah. So I kind of got interested in looking at this question in my day job. I'm an academic, so I'm not working with this data officially right now because I have to finish my actual book to get tenure, among other things. But yeah, so I did a survey, just a really kind of basic pilot survey to sort of see like what were reasons that people trans Izzy. Like literally the main question was, why do you trans Izzy? Over 200 people responded to it. So I got a really wide range of responses about like what drew people to transing Izzy. I haven't been in a fandom as an adult before. So the idea that like a character would be so universally rendered as trans in fan work was just like phenomenal to me as a trans person. And, you know, for myself, I am among many of the people who watched Our Flag and then immediately had to write a fanfic about it. And in my first big fanfic, I cast Izzy as trans, like from the get-go. And part of it was just...
Was that after reading other fics?
No. It was like, I hadn't even read any fic. I literally just kind of dove in and wrote this longer fic. And for me, the reason I did that was when I saw it, like the minute I saw Izzy on screen, he really coded to me as this specific kind of like queer trans elder figure that was important to me when I was coming out as trans. And also that I now kind of see myself not as, but in relation to a lot. So, you know, this very specific gay leather boy aesthetic and like what it means to like be part of the leather scene as a trans man, which you kind of always feel like you're not quite allowed in that space, but you perform the sort of masculine rituals of that space so effectively. And so I really saw him as this like super binary identified, like hardcore trans character, like immediately, like when I was doing that. But that's why I wanted to do the survey, because like I had my own, you know, personal kind of thinking about that. So I kind of, there were three main things that kind of emerged for like why people did that. The first was that there was this sense that Izzy as a character, like in his costuming, in his like, in the way Khan kind of embodied the character, the way that Izzy looked in relation to other characters on the Queen Anne, that he had this very like trans aesthetic. Like he looks trans, therefore I trans him. You know, people cited things like, oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to ask, what is it about him that looks trans?
Yeah, like some of the things that people cited were the fact that like his clothes kind of fit oddly, like he has his sleeves tied up and like his shirt seems really big. He's wearing this like vest that kind of conceals his like chest,
his boots tits. With
the heels. Well, sorry.
I said his massive tits, so we have to point out Khan's tits when I can.
It took me a long time to be comfortable with the obsession people have with Izzy's chest. Like that was something that for me as a trans person was really like took a long time to kind of come around to, but then like it became so powerful to me, like the idea that like someone could have a very like large chest that's the fandom kind of reads in this very specific way. But yeah, that's certainly part of it too. And we know that Khan is shorter, like, you know, there are ways that some stereotypes kind of play into that, but I also think it's about sort of seeing that in a character and in that particular combination. The second kind of big thing was Izzy's story, or the perception of Izzy's story. So Izzy's experience and story on the show being very similar to what it's like often to be a trans person. So in that sense, you know, a story where somebody becomes an expert, but is always kind of not quite enough, like in that particular setting, is second in command, even though they might know more than everyone else around about how to do something. One thing people often talked about was like thinking about Izzy as like the eldest daughter and how you have so much responsibility put upon you and nobody lets you have any feelings either. It was something multiple people talked about. I found this really fascinating because I think it was really different than what my own interpretation of Izzy as trans was. Like I think I sort of saw him having this like very aesthetic an emotional resonance that coded as trans to me, but that fundamental experience of like knowing everything about something and yet not being like regarded as such, knowing everything about being a pirate and not, you know, even being able to take hold as like a captain in the first season, like it's just farce that he even is a captain for like 20 minutes. I think that was really something that a lot of people saw, or like that is what a lot of people expressed as a big reason.
That's interesting that you bring up the like captain thing, because it's almost like he's trying to fit into a role that he's not meant to have, and he doesn't realize that or won't accept it until, you know, like he ends up where he belongs in the end.
And even with the sort of he fails at being a captain and therefore he like pushes Ed to like move back into this role where there's sort of this pair that is Blackbeard, you know, I think kind of fits with that,
yeah,
that framing too. Yeah. But that's also like the third thing, which was like Izzy's, like the way people read Izzy as and his sexuality was also really connected to transness. And in particular, like almost everyone saw Izzy as within a vocabulary of kink. Most people saw him in a role as being a sub, though there is a strong wing of the Izzy fandom that much strongly prefers thinking and writing Izzy as a dom or a daddy. And so that kind of those kinds of moments we see in the show where like kink vocabulary is sort of parlayed, but like when Ed is suspended and Izzy's trying to get him down, when Izzy gets choked, even the toe cutting scene.
I was going to say the toe cutting pretty like read pretty like strong as Izzy being a sub. But what I'm curious from the people who see Izzy as a dom, what are they pulling from, or what evidence are they seeing, or how do they arrive at that idea?
I think a lot of the people who write and think of Izzy in that role are themselves tops and doms, but also like I think he codes very well into a specific kind of like top or dom that some people have experience with, who has a very like calm affect, who has a plan, who is going to get you from A to B, like, and the pleasure is in the performing that to you rather than like the performance itself. I think that's, I've written some top slash dom Izzy, and that's sort of how I have seen him, is like the pleasure in performing what somebody else really needs and wants. And also, yeah, enjoying sort of the aesthetic and sort of material aspects of that, I think is another thing people, I think that's why he gets kind of like more leather coated than
yeah,
just BDSM coated.
When I see top Izzy, it's usually with Steed. And I think that also has a lot to do with people liking the bitch for bitch relationship. Mm-hmm. And wanting to see Izzy take some stuff out on Steed. You know, I see him top with Steed more than I see him top with Ed. But also, Izzy is always a sub.
I feel like because I do seek out a lot of top Izzy, I see him. I'd agree with you that largely a lot of it is with Steed. But there's also a really strong wing, too, of people who have him in that relationship with Ed, especially if Ed is trans femme. And that's like another thing that is kind of, that was a sort of sub finding from my survey, was that Izzy was kind of a gateway for a lot of people to trans all of the characters in different ways, or to find a really trans narrative in other characters. I kind of experienced this as a writer, like I got really into, I'm really into like trans Dizzy and like thinking about them as like foils to each other in terms of the trans experience. Like Izzy's this trans guy who's had to like work tooth and nail, like for years and years and years to access healthcare for transition, to be read as a man, to like move as a trans man. And then Steed's like a late in life transitioner who not only has a ton of money, but can take advantage of how far like things have come for trans people to easily transition and have a really affirming and pleasurable experience with it. And so that dynamic is just so juicy to me. I like can't get enough of it. So that's, you know, that's one that I've seen some, and then a lot of people also trans Ed a lot more as a trans femme character, but certainly not only, there's certainly a lot of trans mask Ed too. So, and there's a tendency to like, it seems like it's a gateway. Like once someone has transed someone else via trans Izzy, they then like revert back to Izzy being cis. So I don't know. It's very, it's very interesting. Like what people do.
What's been your single most fascinating finding in your research?
I think the most fascinating thing to me was that folks really saw something in Izzy, regardless of their particular configuration of their own trans identity. So a lot of trans people were transing Izzy. A number of folks who like self-identified as like BIPOC trans folks, especially trans mask folks, really, really identified with Izzy's kind of role as this sort of, yeah, like eldest daughter who's transitioned and who hasn't, has kind of, that's really changed their role in relation to their family. And that means that the way they express emotion feels really different now too. And so folks, even though like Khan is white, and in the first season, at least, like we sort of read him as perhaps able-bodied, like folks had a really like intersectional understanding of what it meant for Izzy to be trans, which is kind of fascinating if we think about the fact that like it's this like old white British actor who's playing this character.
It's fascinating though, is Khan in his past roles is so gender.
I feel like Izzy's like cast as the, you know, scorned wife too, and I think that helps with it as well, at least until he became the father figure somehow.
I feel like we see a similar gender flavor with like David Tennant, if you look at the roles David's played in the past and how much of it, I feel like it almost goes beyond ally, but he is, you know, I feel like I see kind of the same vibe from Khan, where it's just
a bit of a fluidity, not really like made a huge thing out of, but very much embraced.
It's fascinating.
Like one last thing I would say too, like I know I sort of started this thinking like, well, Izzy's this figure who like doesn't get to change while all these other people change around him. But one of the things that I like first tweeted when I started a fandom Twitter was like, I think in 3 years we're gonna have like 500,000 more trans men because of the show, and I really specifically meant because of Izzy. And yeah, I have had so many folks I know who I connected with through fandom who did transition post this show, and so mm-hmm. as a figure, like this fandom lore and this figure of Izzy has been a powerful like touchstone for a lot of people actually starting and embracing their transition.
Khan gets like a ton of people at every convention come up to him and tell him how like his portrayal of Izzy is what helped them realize they were trans, or helped, you know, make mm-hmm. them feel comfortable to come out or to transition or whatever. And he just is super touched by that always. And, you know, you see he shares all the like trans everything, like, yes, yes, yes. He's very supportive.
Oh, I think God. Also like how much the show, like the representation in the show, like both from the part of the writers and the creators, but also the cast members with Biko identifying as non-binary and celebrating everything that comes his way about the fandom from the part of the fandom. So like loving all of the trans representation, loving everything about the fan interactions that he's had, like that has invited like this environment of like this welcoming environment of some curiosity and some like reflection on like, oh, like the world is expanding around me and where do I fit in that? So watching my Twitter friends, only just gay pirate Twitter, like, and how many people have grown to identify in, whether they're now kind of adjusting their pronouns a little bit or like identifying as non-binary or coming out through like the whole LGBT spectrum. It's just been really fun to watch like this fandom grow in their own ways.
Beautiful.
I completely agree with that.
We do have to get on to other topics, but we've been teasing on the Instagram that we have Izzy, what would we call it? An Izzy tidbit? An Izzy knowledge?
Factoid.
An Izzy factoid. We got to hype this for a second. That Khan has shared and he has given permission for us to share this tidbit, this factoid on the podcast. And we are the first place that this tidbit is being shared.
Yeah. And you guys don't even know what it is. So it could be anything. I could say anything right now.
I will take any of it.
But we have the affirmation from Khan that this is okay. I mean,
yes, I want to be very clear about that. I asked him explicitly that it's okay that I share this. And he said, yes, just FYI, that is a real thing that happened.
And just to hype it further before we drop it.
You have me breathing into paper bag right now.
We do have so much to thank Khan for on this podcast, because Khan was the first person to share this podcast when we dropped our first episode. And that helped us find our audience. And now we have a whole bunch of listeners. So thank you, Khan, for that. Thank you, Khan, for this tidbit that we get to share. We're so excited.
Yeah. So, well, when we decided, and today I was like, okay, I'll do the Izzy, and I was gonna talk about Izzy's tattoos and the ring that he wears on his necktie. And I said to him, like, hey, you know, I'm doing this tonight, we're recording this, is there any little tidbits that you might like care to share with me? And I specifically said, you know, I know you're not going to tell us who gave Izzy the ring, because he's talked about the ring before, and you know it was
and just for clarification, we're talking about the ring that he wears on his scarf,
around his neck.
So
most people know that, I forget what color the ring originally was, but like Khan's mom in real life had passed away not too long before they started filming, and he asked that the gem in the ring be changed to an emerald because that's his mom's birthstone. You didn't know that?
I did it.
So it made him feel closer to his mom. But he never really wanted to specify if like that had any connection to Izzy's mom or whatever, just that, you know, that made him feel closer to his own mom. And Then in the last Ouija one day that we got, he had said that there was like a tattoo we never saw of Izzy that, you know, was on his wrist and it's someone's name and they never got to reveal it and all this stuff. So Khan always seems to kind of like, he teases about the ring, but he won't give information about it. He doesn't want it to all come out, I guess. So I said, you know, I know you're not going to talk about who the ring came from, but like maybe tell me something about the X tattoo, because like we talk about that, but we don't really know what it actually means to you. And I'm thinking that's what he might say something to me about. But then he came back with this bombshell, and I was driving and I had to pull over because, and I was like, I was like, have you said this somewhere and I missed it? And he said, no, that's my gift to you. Do with it what thou wilt. And what he said was, the ring isn't from anyone. It was about to be given to someone.
No.
God.
So, yeah.
So Izzy was going to give this ring to someone.
Yes.
And do we know why it didn't?
He didn't go any further, but I said, you don't mind if I tell people? And he said, feel free. And then he said, one day I'll tell you the whole story. So someday I might know. He has said that to me about several things, and I'm going to hold him to it. Yeah, I was like, this is about, and I think why he did it probably is because this is about to launch so many new fanfics and fan arts. And I just picture him sitting back, waiting for all the fan art, giving a ring to somebody to roll in so he can post it on his stories because he just loves it. So, yes, let it come forth. This ring was not from somebody, but for somebody.
And so just so we have like all the information. So the ring we're talking about is the ring on his scarf. He was going to give that to someone. It didn't happen. We don't know why.
Yeah.
He also has a tattoo on his wrist with someone's name on it.
Someone's name that they put on him every day, he says. And you never see it, but he said they were talking about revealing it like after his death, and that didn't happen. So all of us, when he said that on the Ouija one day thing, everybody's like zooming on every picture of Khan's hand to see, because it's under the gloved hand, of course. But we're like, what? You know, and there's only one time where his sleeve is ever rolled up or anything. And that's when he, right after his leg has been cut off and his glove is off and he's, you know, got the gun up to shoot Ed. But they have filmed it in such a clever way where every time you can maybe see his wrist, the gun is covering it. It's at a weird angle. The shadows are there. So they covered it up super well. God. So this name is probably connected with the ring. But
I would really like to know. Yeah. I mean, of course, yeah, obviously everything. I would like to know everything.
Yeah.
But specifically the ring, how the ring being for someone connects to what Khan also said in the Ouija one day, that Izzy's regret was that he never let himself love. Mm-hmm. I want to know how all these pieces fit together in a story.
The mystery. But yeah, I know we're going to get like a bajillion.
And this ring has an emerald in it.
Yes. It's a gold band with an emerald. Yeah. So we're going to get like him like proposing to Ed with it and stuff. But, you know, there's going to be it's so many. There's so many possibilities now. Like, I can't get into it right here because I will talk all night.
Yes. And we have 24 minutes left. Ooh. So we have the other fandom. Thank you so much for sharing and for dropping that bombshell.
You're very welcome. And yes, I thanked Khan very much in anticipation for how wild everything's going to be when this drops on Twitter on Monday.
So who wants to go next with their fandom lore topic?
I just kind of segueing off of Ringo was just saying about people probably are going to start really watching to see where anything might be revealed around the wrist.
Like, I think people already have.
Is it fan lore to like talk about how our fandom could like solve murder mystery? Like, everybody is so good at deep diving and solving mysteries, and like I came into this fandom into Twitter, and there were like literal, like there were dissertations about just like everything that they would be reading into the stories or everything. So just, I'm excited about how this fandom is going to, and how it continues to take every teeny tiny little nugget, this morsel, and just.
It does. The fandom sees everything in the show except for the wall, which I think is part of is part of why it was such a big deal. Because we have noticed every little costume thing, every tiny little background, whatever, everything, but not that wall.
I remember reading something through before I got into Twitter, like through Facebook, one of the fandom sites, about breath work in acting and the moonlight scene between Steed and Ed, and just kind of like the quick intake of breath and what that means in theater, and how like the spacing of it happened through like through this lens of a theater major. And I was just like, oh my God, this just, I give it all to me. I want it all.
If we could harness the power of the autism, our flag means murder solving. Our flag means true crime.
Yes. Only murders in the shipwreck. Speaking of theater, I am thinking about how it's, if you want something sneaky to happen on stage, whether it's some technical transition or whatever, you create a bunch of action on the other side of the stage, so the audience is focused there. So now I'm thinking that they could just slip all of these hints into any of the scenes where Ed and Steed are kissing, and we will not have seen them. That's where they hide all the truths.
That would be a really great task for David Jenkins' next project. Now you know what David Jenkins, because of course you're listening to us. Also, if you are listening, please, we want you to be on the show sometime. So message me. But for your next show, you could hide all the clues in the kissing scenes, because literally all we are paying attention to is the hands on the bodies and the kissing. And you could literally have the name of the killer on the wall behind them, and we'll be
wall,
like,
what wall?
There's a wall there? Okay, Chloe, what's your fandom lore topic?
Well, I wanted to talk about some of the that have been going around, mainly from Samba and Reese. Reese started a cameo, gosh, I don't, how long would it have been? That was early February, late January, I think.
Yeah. I've watched every single one of them.
Absolutely. As do
every
I.
single one of them.
Yes.
Every single 1 hour long cameo. That is, when they first came out, people were complaining about the price, but like, I think he set that price so that he doesn't have to run off to like Cozumel again from the like questions about him making out with Taika, but also he really makes it worth it. He gives you everything.
So does Samba.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I don't know to what extent it's really fandom lore as something that's kind of entered the zeitgeist of OFMD, but
even Cameo has gotten on board and has acknowledged
that's
that
true.
Is like the biggest Cameo draw, and so they post all of these memes and references to Reese Darby, and
wild.
I have a feeling even they're like, he probably is like, I don't have time to keep on doing this. And Cameo is like, no, please, Reese. And he's like, I guess I have to open it up again, but I'll just have to raise my rates because I can't keep up with all the demand.
It's wild how all these like brand name things are suddenly like into the Gay Pirate Show and posting all these memes and gifts and stuff from the show.
And honestly, like, capitalize on us. Like,
right, that's what HBO never did.
Yeah, like, nice. You see how crazy we get. Any streamer who picks us up, just saying.
Which is a good segue into Lube as a Crew, which is probably one of the most iconic fandom lore topics. And we should kind of tell it as a story with like a beginning, middle, and end, so that we have this. This is the oral history of Lube as a Crew.
Oral history.
I see what you did there.
Now I'll slip into the story.
So slip on in.
It started with Moosh, who I would love Moosh to be on the podcast at some point, because Moosh is such an icon in the fandom. Moosh was repeatedly tweeting increasingly hilarious tweets at Astroglide about the show. and like with like little catchphrases and pitches. And then eventually Astroglide was like, it seems like I should start watching Our Flag Means Death. And that just erupted. People were like, yeah. And then Astroglide decided to host a watch party. They did that twice. This is from Chloe's meme. They did that twice.
Three times, actually, as it went when they did season that two. Meme was pre the season two Loop as a Crew. But that made three.
And I'll open up to you guys. Do you have any favorite memories from the Loop as a Crew days?
When they announced they were going to do the first part of the watch thing, my friend's bar that I'm having an Eclipso party at, I was like, okay, everyone in Pittsburgh. After the first day, I met Chloe, right?
Yep, it was a lot of fun.
I was like, okay, everyone come to the bar and we'll watch it, you know, and tweet along and everything. And my friend who owns the bar is kind of like, what? Okay, whatever, you know, and we all went and drank Lime Rickeys and watched Our Flag Means Death and tweeted along with the Lube Company. And then I posted a picture of us doing this and tagged Astroglide, and they like shared it on their thing, including my mention of this bar. And my friend's like getting notifications that her bar has been shared on the Astroglide like fan page.
Nice.
She's like, I don't even know what you're doing down there. I guess that's great. Yay. It is a queer they bar, so it's very on brand. We were very happy with it.
Awesome.
My favorite part of it was just whenever Astroglide would lose their shit at all the same parts, we all lost our shit. And just kind of being able to relive those experiences, the kisses, the devastations, the heartbreak, the hilarity, like every moment that is just so part of who we are as people now, watching those have those same meaning for our bestie at Astroglide was
fall in love with the show and in the way that we were.
Yeah, like watching it with your friend and you're just like staring at them like, are you going to react at the right part?
Be like, I'm ready to hold you in this fun. Next part.
It's so fun when a new person discovers it and you get to live vicariously through them when they see the moments. And we can kind of do that. I just got to say, we can kind of do that with People of Earth. Like if you guys haven't watched People of Earth yet, there's a lot of those moments in there. Mm. And so I know you have to pay $40 to watch both seasons, but watch People of Earth and then tweet about it so we can all live through it. Okay, so we got 14 minutes left. I feel like a big fandom lore topic is what happened to Nathan between season one and season two, and all of us, the true crime investigation that was, is Nathan Fode in New Zealand during the season two shooting? And do you guys remember any moments from that?
I don't, so I will not contribute to this because I didn't join until August of 2023.
Wow.
So I actually have tremendous respect for everybody who went through this process with Nathan and just in general wondering like what is going to happen, because I think I just would have died. And I only had to survive like a couple months before season two came out, and not even knowing if there was going to be a season two, like I just don't think I would have made it. So much respect.
Yeah, I was definitely guilty as charged, constantly refreshing Nathan's Twitter and Instagram for like any clues. Nathan did say on Ouija on Mondays that there was a stalkery element. So you guys, these are real people. It's important to chill out. Mm-hmm. But I do admit, I was zooming in on the pic as well, and a big kind of revelation happened. I don't know the exact date, but Nathan posted a selfie and someone pointed out that the socket behind him was the kind of socket that you would only see in New Zealand.
So extra.
And then there was another bit where a fan, I think that fan's name was Chloe as well, who was in New Zealand.
It was not me. I would love to have gone to New Zealand, but that was not me.
Yeah. But yeah, when they came upon the whole cast dining.
At the restaurant,
yeah.
And Nathan was the one that took the photo of her with the cast so that he wasn't in the photo. And
everybody was like, did Nathan take this picture? And she's like, no.
She kept the secret.
She was great. I don't know if I could have done that, you know?
And then I believe Khan emailed her after the show came out, thanking her for keeping the secret.
She messaged them like late. It was actually relatively soon to when the photo was taken, and just said like, thanks for, you know, taking pictures with me. It was so nice to meet you guys. And he said, thanks for keeping our secret, you know.
Very nice. And I believe also the rumor is Nathan said something, if you tell anyone that it was me, they won't believe you.
which is such a lie because they.
What's so funny about this too is that, like, I don't think anyone actually thought Lucius was dead. So yeah. It's like we all kind of knew he was coming back, but that wasn't really the point.
Yeah. Well, I felt like an extreme anxiety. I'm like, oh my gosh, if Lucius ends up being really dead, like that will ruin the show for me. And so I was like, oh, please don't be dead.
Izzy Canyon felt at the end of
season 2. I know.
Just if you are wondering, this is it. But we were all like, it's a comedy show. They won't kill Lucius.
No, I'm sorry.
I'm just letting you know.
But a big thing that really gave a lot of people hope was then people checked Nathan's Instagram settings and he didn't change the location, and the location said New Zealand.
Yeah.
And so people were
and
like,
again, detectives in this fandom.
Yeah.
Figured that
they needed
out.
To give him like a training course on how to not do all this stuff. But then Fernando, like,
I was there for the Fernando thing because it was the last day of shooting and I was frantically like, you know, refreshing every, and here's the thing, guys, I have never like been one to follow people on Instagram or whatever because of a show, but this show made me follow literally every director, every writer, every prop person, every cast member of the show. I'm like, every
when Samba did his crew shout out,
yeah,
I followed everyone.
Every single
show does shout out to your brain.
So when I saw Fernando Frias' story pop up on Instagram, of course I clicked on it. And what do I see? I see Nathan's little face there. And I took a screenshot of that and I circled it in Photoshop and I sent it to Rosie.
It was obvious. It was not like a Where's Waldo situation.
It was
like right up in front. Like, this is very obvious and Fernando gave no fucks.
I think he forgot. Maybe.
I don't know. It was either that or where he was like, okay, lol, the filming is done. Let's just let him have it, you know?
And also it only stayed up for like a minute and then he deleted it right away.
But that doesn't matter because the internet is forever.
Yes. And there's no obsession like our flag fan obsession. So very I took that level. Screenshot as soon as I saw it, knowing that oh, that's gonna be gone.
Yeah, and remember Nathan had during one of the Ouija on Wednesdays, he had the little paper button he made that said don't ask about season 2. And when I went to SuperCon and met them, I made all three of the Con and Nathan and Christian actual buttons that said that don't ask about season 2. When I gave Nathan, put his on right away, and then when I gave them to Con and Christian, they both were like, did Nathan get one?
Did you write it backward in the way that it showed?
No,
because that's
the like
best part.
Actual, you know,
he did the mirror effect.
Nice, yeah, it's a fancy button.
Okay, we have
learning the technology.
What I've learned from this podcast is that we will probably have to do a fan lore part 2 because we haven't even covered Jim Alaska yet.
Or ask tonight
when Irene can be on, because that's her story. So yeah, honestly, there could be a fandom lore episode every here and there because there's so much.
There's so much. And it's going to grow. There's going to continue to be more fandom lore in the years to come.
So okay. I wonder, like, if listeners could like maybe list off the ones that they know of that they would like to hear more of or would like to participate in sharing. But if there's any like follow-up questions about the ones that we have today, because I think like every single one of these we could like pull at and pull more out of. Which, sorry, real quick, I found my tweet that I got from Astroglide. So when you were asking like what other like fun stuff came out of that whole lube as a crew. And Astroglide had written, word on the seas is you want another watch along with like little two eye emojis. And I wrote back to them on my knees, begging. And they wrote back, good girl, with like preens, nice. like just cleaning up myself. And love I really it. Should have put in a little meme of them from Community where he, where the principal was like, I hope this doesn't awaken something.
Yeah.
That's really what I was thinking when I wrote back preens. So yeah. that's my little mini moment of Astroglide fame.
Okay, five minutes left. Neil, what are you working on and where can people find you?
Yeah, so I, in terms of my fan of life, I'm still writing some fanfic. So I'm on AO3 as Annealed.
And is it Annealed?
No, Annealed, like the word Anneal, but with my name in EIL instead of NEAL. And I kind of had to take a break, but I'm getting back into working on my season 2 rewrite, which is a sequel to my first big fic that I wrote after season 1. It's called Ethical Sluts. And it's like a book that is like a real classic about opening up your relationship. And so Steed is reading that and annotating it as he navigates his new relationship with Ed and Izzy, and also featuring the crew is a big part of all of my work. And there's a lot of things that happen with the garlic soup polycule in that story. Okay. And so it's a lot of fun. I'm excited to get back into writing it. So that's where I'm at on the internet.
And Chloe, where can people find you? What are you working on?
I can't really be found anywhere right now, but I am working on some personal essays or a collection I have envisioned that I'd like to try to get up on Medium or Substack soon. So I'd love to come back and maybe by next time I'll have somewhere that I can be found.
Perfect. And Lacey, what are you working on? You're working on a corset right now. Where can people find you?
Trying to spiral lace this bodice.
As one Ren Fair
opens tomorrow.
Oh, say that again. You cut out. The Ren Fair opens tomorrow.
Yeah, in SoCal where I'm at, the Ren Fair opens tomorrow. You can find me at Joy Goblin on Instagram and TikTok, but mostly Instagram. And I host the Temple of Geek podcast. We actually have a Ren Fair podcast episode coming out sometime next week, and an interview with that game company creative team also probably next week, because I don't know what a publishing schedule is.
And Ringa, what are you working on? Where can people find you?
I am Ringa Sun, RingaSunn, on like basically every social media app. This coming weekend, the 12th through the 14th, is Steel City Con in Pittsburgh. So if you Pittsburgh listeners are listening, go to Steel City Con, and I have a booth there. You know, I make bling and buttons and all kinds of good stuff. So come see me in aisle I think. And I'm the one with all the billions of buttons and bottle caps. You can't miss me, but I've got one of everything you could want for Our Flag Means Death.
Love it. And Carly, what are you working on? Where can people find you? You've been posting lots of good photos lately. I'm excited.
Yeah, on Instagram, you can find me at fangirlphoto. I just got done with WonderCon and also brought my camera, but I don't know how the pictures will work out for the kink vamp and the kink party that we had with Vico Ortiz. So I'm not sure if those have turned out. And then on Twitter, you can find me at Slangelian for the political stuff that we were doing for supporting the strikers. It was the people on strike. It was WGA_fandom love. And I think that's it.
And I'm Carly Heath. I'm a writer. And hey, I went to Barnes & Noble yesterday, and my book is still in Barnes & Noble. So you can pick up Reckless Kind a Barnes & Noble near you. And also, but mostly go to indie bookstores. And I'm also working on a young adult fantasy thing that might be happening soon. And I narrated my first two chapters of Whittle Me This for our minisode last week. So you can check that out as well. And follow this podcast on Instagram at Our flag means fan fiction, all one word.
That's it. We have a follow giveaway thing happening now.
I forgot about that. Yeah, find our post that says we're trying to get to 500 followers and like that, and then comment at one of your friends and you will be entered to win some magnets that have all the little flags on them.
Yay.
Thanks, guys. And look, 19 seconds left. I stayed on time.
Wow, that is truly impressive.
Bravo. I'm so proud.